Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from Lighthouse Hockey and the Fans First Sports Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me on this Sunday evening via Zencaster, as always, is my good friend Michael Lieboff. And Mike, we did an episode a couple weeks ago called They're Still on the Rails. Right now, things seem to be teetering a bit off the rails. The season is not over. They're still kind of, you know, within range of the playoffs. So that's the good news. The bad news is they lost three games and their last four. They have a road trip coming up in Western Canada, which is not looking at all promising. And the players are speaking out. The fans are speaking out. Everything's bad right now. And it doesn't look like much is being done to change things. It's been kind of a wild week. Where are you at right now? And what are your thoughts towards the New York Islanders?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because the one shred of good news here is that the season isn't over.
Yes.
You know, like it's the Islanders are very very lucky that a lot of other teams in the Eastern Conference have gone through these kind of turbulent runs already too, and they're just the latest one to do it. But since it's happening here, it does feel like the sky's falling down. And honestly, if I think it's fair to say that right now, it's not hyperbolic to say that the season has gone a little off the rails here. You and I and a lot of other people in the Islander country talk about how how much we appreciate the stability that the Lamoriello regime has brought. Things rarely, even if things aren't going well, they rarely get out of church, you know, like it stays within the four walls. But now that seems to be crumbling a bit, at least they're showing some cracks with the Cizikas thing, which I know we'll talk to at deeper length later. It's just not inspiring at all. Because I think that their issues are still relatively fixable. And I apologize for my voice being a bit shot. I had my sister's wedding on Saturday night, but it's fixed. They're fixable, but you and me and everybody else listening to this aren't the ones who can fix it. It's to me, there seem like there are some simple solution personnel wise to make, and we know that the Islanders version of Lou Lamoriello isn't one to just walk in the door and shake everything up at all. And the most frustrating thing to me was that even when the Islanders were doing all right, you and me and I think everybody who's watched this team saw this coming. And we kind of put a marker in the season right here, like on today, Sunday, being like, yeah, then they go out west and they better have their act together before then, because you can very easily come home empty handed, basically like they did last year. And I know that professional athletes and coaches are almost robotic in the way that they just take things one day at a time and they don't look ahead or all that. But when this almost exact script happened last year, albeit later in the season, like if you and I could see this coming, that means that everybody else could should have been able to see it coming, right? Like,
yeah.
That's what's frustrating. The Islanders beat the Capitals last week, and the first thing that I thought about was, boy, they need to get, like, great, all right, we won, but mm-hmm. they better get points against the Wild after the Hurricanes game. Like, I didn't expect much out of the Hurricanes game, but
right.
I was like, they have to get a couple more points.
Or the Bruins game, for that matter.
Yeah, or the Bruins game. Yeah, like, they're going to need points because they're not playing well. And once they stop getting bounces, like, this is going to turn into a tailspin. And the one thing I will say is I'm almost at peace at this point with it. Like, it's a lot easier to be here in the actual throes of a tailspin rather than where we were a couple of days ago, maybe before the Bruins game, where you're like, okay, or the Wild game. Like, we see this coming. But it's not here yet, and that's a little bit more stressful than actually being in the middle of it.
It's always the anticipation. I mean, that's for anything. The anticipation is that's how roller coasters work. You know, like that ride up to get going is often the worst part, and then afterwards there's like a little hill and then a bigger hill later on. So yeah, it's true. And again, there's a lot of stuff we're going to talk about that I think you and I and you know, conditioned Islanders fans saw coming. Talking about the Capitals game. When you find out that a guy is making his second career start, you're like, yeah, he's going to get a win because this is how the Islanders do it every single time. There's never – I thought he was going to get a shutout. I came one goal away from being right. But it's like it's with alarming regularity that this team makes the same mistakes over and over and over again, and that's what's made this so frustrating. Before we dive in fully, reminder that we are on Patreon, patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. You can get ad-free episodes of this show, plus bonus podcasts, written posts, and a whole lot more. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. Sign up today. Plans start as low as $2 a month. So I don't know how granular we want to get into these three games this week, because A, they sucked, and B, they all kind of followed a similar script. We're talking about a 4-2 loss to the Minnesota Wild, and then a 5-2 loss to the Boston Bruins, and then a 4-1 loss to Washington at home on Saturday, yesterday when we're recording this. And in all of them, the Islanders didn't really play all that poorly for large portions of the game. They were pretty even with Minnesota. They were, you know, 2-2 going into the third period. The wheels fell apart. Took too many penalties, too many turnovers. And before you know it, boom, it's over and it's, you know, 4-2 Wild. And there you go. Engvall gets benched the next game. We'll talk about that too. Again, against the Bruins, they again played pretty well for against a team that's, you know, in first place in the conference. They were only down 2-1 going into the third, which all things considered is pretty good. They tie it on a beautiful shorthanded goal by Simon Holmstrom, and you think, okay, this is great. But then on that same power play, they give up a goal to David Pastrnak, and then the Bruins go take it from there, and they win 5-2. Charlie Coyle has a hat trick, and that's the end of that. And then against the Caps, I mean, honestly, they were the better team for the most part. But the Caps kind of, you know, hunkered down around rookie Hunter Shepard. And towards the end of the second, two goals, one with 40 seconds left in the period. They threw everything they could at the kid in the third period, but it was all just kind of just point shots and hope plays that, you know, you hope bounced off of somebody, but it didn't really work. Nothing was super high danger. And Ovechkin gets a second into an empty netter, goal 800 and God knows whatever. And, you know, it was a very tidy 4-1 loss that seemed like it shouldn't have happened. Like, I mean, they were only down 3-1 going into the third against a team starting a rookie goalie that hadn't played all that well. You'd think, okay, well, you know, at least we can get this thing to overtime, can't we? No. Like, in the blink of an eye, it went from, you know, 16 minutes in the third to 3 minutes in the third. And you're just like, this is over. This is done. And so it was three very frustrating ways to lose hockey games by playing pretty well. And then the wheels just come off in the third. And this is where people start getting mad at the coach. And, you know, this has already been a story now, people chanting fire Lane, fire Lambert, at the end of the Caps game. Casey Cizikas said to reporters later on, it's a joke. That stuff ticks me off. It really does. I got no time for those fans. I got no time for them. If they want to be like that, they can stay home. Strong words from Mr. Dial. I want to die an Islander, and we get it. It's tough. You know, I wouldn't want to hear boos at my job either. But man, when you lose three games like this in the same week, it's brutal. And you know, it's just to not pick up any points and to just have, you know, these three games in which you played pretty well I'll go to the third in winnable situations, and then you come out with 0 points. Man, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to be like, oh, well, I guess we'll get them next time. Like, no, there is no next time. The game's over. Like, we got to get points here. And so I get where Casey's coming from, but man, you can't vocalize like that. Were you at, obviously you weren't at Saturday's game Tuesday's game, or I guess the Bruins game was in Boston, but like, were you at that game against the Wild by any chance, or how much of these three did you manage to watch at all?
No, I wasn't there. I did watch basically all the first two, and the frustrating thing is, I'll park the Capitals and Casey conversation for a second, is them losing these games is, I'm going to say it again, like the frustrating thing about it is we all saw it coming. Like, it would be a little different if this wasn't a endemic issue with this team that's now 2 years old. Like, this isn't something that's brand new where, like, they're just going through a cold streak shooting, or they're just not getting a save, or bad breaks, or whatever. No, we've seen this story before. We saw it last year until the All-Star break, really. Like I said, it just came later in the season last year. I mean, there was that start where a lot of these issues in that 2-4 start. But then if it was around January, they went 1-7-3. And I think when they went out west, so they beat the Blue Jackets at home 2-1 to give them a 3-game winning streak. And if you remember, we were like, okay, that was good. Like, they're in good shape, but this can go pear-shaped very quickly here. Like, they've done nothing to instill confidence that they're going to be able to weather another storm. And this is a team that was their bread and butter, was like weathering adverse moments when they were at their best. And then so they beat the Blue Jackets. They flew out to Seattle on New Year's Day. And if you remember, that was one of the worst games of hockey you'd have ever seen. They lost 4-1. They rebounded with a win against the Canucks, who were circling the drain at the moment. And then they proceeded to just be terrible for until the All-Star break.
Right.
They finally got off the schneid with a win against the Red Wings and the Golden Knights. Like, they went on a little bit of a heater in and out of the All-Star break with pre and post Horvat, but so that's the frustrating thing, is this isn't a new problem. This is something we saw last year with this same group for the most part and the same coaching staff. So why hasn't it just been better? Like, where is the team that can like pull itself out of these moments? Because I don't trust them at all to be able to do this. Like, this is, I don't know. It's so frustrating, because like I've seen these losses so many times from this team the past three seasons. And then so the Cizikas game. So yeah, it was my sister's wedding on Saturday, and we actually, my now brother-in-law was staying at the Garden City Hotel, and I had that circled, of course, because I was like, okay, that means, like, you know, the Washington Capitals are probably going to be there. They're playing the Islanders that night. I'm going to make sure I do my part.
The Garden City Hotel is like low key kind of an important place in Islanders history. Like, a lot of crazy stuff has gone on there related to the Islanders over the years. So it's kind of funny.
And Ed Belfour fought Alex Auld in the lobby of the Garden City Hotel when they were both on the Panthers. But I had this circled, knowing that they were in New Jersey the night before. And I want to say I was actively looking for them, but I did run into them in the, like, on like a lobby. And of course, like, the first person I see is Kirk Muller, obviously. And he's like, oh, is there a wedding tonight? Is it one of you guys getting married? And I said, no, I can't talk to you. Like, I'm an Islanders fan. And he laughed, actually. He, like, just like you did, very, you know, took it well. And he's like, I get it. But like, is it you? Are you getting married? And I was like, no, I actually can't. I'm not allowed to talk to you. Like, you, for the stunt you pulled. And he laughed again and kind of just like went about his business. And then I was with my brother, and Tom Wilson walked by, and he's like, you know, that was a real cheap shot you put on Wisnowski.
Wow. Jeez.
And Tom Wilson was like, what? And my brother's like, when you hurt Lubo, that was a cheap shot. And he's like, he's got to keep his head up. And then we started yelling back at him, and I was like, yeah. And then Hickey got you, man. And he's like 5'10", and he's like, you tell them to stay off the tracks, and then just walked away. And wow. Then my other brother and I were just waiting for an elevator, and Dylan Strom walked off, and he was looking at his phone, so he almost walked into us and did, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you. And I was like, go Isles. And he goes, oh, come on, and just kept walking.
So if you're Dylan Strom, you should be thankful that somebody recognized you enough in a road city to, you know, not acknowledge and be a fan and be like, hey man, I would not have recognized Dylan Strom. I think I'd probably barely recognize Ryan Strom. He played for the Islanders for like 6 years. So come on, Dylan.
But this is home ice advantage, right? Like this is home ice advantage. This is all within the rules of love and war, I think. Yeah. And it wasn't like we were taking crowbars to them. Right. We were just chirping them.
Good on Ted Leonsis for shelling out for a nice upset for his cap. Yeah. So good on that.
So like that went on for a while, and then we went to the wedding, I saw what happened, and then I saw the Cizikas quotes. And little does he know, like 8 hours or 10 hours before that, there were Islander fans trying to do their part. Tried to throw some Capitals off their game the best they could. That's in the lobby of a hotel while wearing tuxedos. They're probably like, do not go out there. There's some psychopaths and bow ties.
Have you reckoned with the fact that maybe you fired the Caps up in order?
I have, and I'm like, you know what? I'm not mad about it because I did what I had to do. I said what I had to say to two Islander villains, and but my point is that, like, yeah, Casey, they can say that.
Yeah.
Just like you can say, the question has to get asked, and you're always like, no player is going to say, oh yeah, I'm with them. You know, like I think Kyle Clutterbuck came as close as you can to endorsing it. He said they paid for it so they can do whatever they want.
Well, Bo Horvat was like, you know, it's on us to stop them from doing that. Like, we've got to play better and we've got to win. And he's right.
he's seen it before. Like,
sure, absolutely. Yeah. And so much, you know, and it's funny, like, they're about the same age probably. And so it's just two very different approaches.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm with you. Like, I don't know. I get where Casey's coming from, but at the same time, man, they got to tell you something. Like, they got to say something.
And you know who this fan base is. Like, this isn't like the Toronto Maple Leafs or Oilers or the like Vancouver Canucks, where every little like water drop gets turned into a thunderstorm. It's I don't think as a whole, there are fickle fans in every fan base, but I don't think as a whole Islander fans are fickle. This is a very well context, you know, a fan base that understands context pretty well and understands situations pretty well. And there are always going to be little sects that are anti whatever coach, whatever captain, whatever superstar, and whatever GM are in charge. But for the most part, I think Islander fans just understand where this team is in the grand scheme of things, not just in hockey, but in the entire sporting universe.
I mean, we've said that Islanders fans are among the most plugged in of all hockey fans. Like, you could just watch a game and you know that these people get it. I mean, these are people that have cheered dumpouts and playoff games because it just meant that the other team had to go back and try it again. And, like, you know, that wall was set up on their own blue line and you just weren't going to get anything. Like, who does that? Who cheers, you know, forechecking at the end of a game? Like, not a lot of people will do that. These people are plugged in. And we have one wish. We just want you to win games. And, like, you've lost four in a row. And in every one, you just fell apart in the third period, which, again, is the most frustrating thing. And it's natural for us to look upon the coach because, like I said off the top, it does not seem as if anybody is doing a damn thing to fix this. that's where the frustration comes in. Like, the players certainly are playing the same way, and nothing, they're not getting any results. The coach doesn't seem to have changed anything. The GM signed everybody for 6 or 7 years, so then we know they're not going anywhere. I did see one person be like, oh, we need new ownership. Stop that right now, because we've been through other ownership ringers with this team. No, those guys are fine. Leave them alone. But the on-ice product needs to be changed, and something needs to happen, because you can't keep going on like this, just losing games in the third period. It doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't understand what are the players thinking about this? Like, when you go into the locker room after throwing, blowing a game in the third period, or, not making what really should be, a 1 or 2 goal comeback. Like, what are they thinking? Like, well, we'll get them next time. Well, what if you run out of next times? What if the next time is in Edmonton, a place where you barely seem to win ever? And then Vancouver, Seattle, and Calgary. We're going to talk all about the road trip coming up. Like, none of it makes any sense. And, like, you and I are here venting our frustrations into a podcast. Half of the Islanders fan base seems to have podcasts. So it's like, this is a common way to get your frustrations out. But if you don't and you're at the game, people are going to boo you. And to be blunt, a lot of people, from the sound of UBS Arena, it sounds like a lot of people did stay home, because in that third period of that Caps game on Saturday, that place was dead. It was an absolute library. Like, there was nothing going on, because there was just no reason to believe the Islanders were going to come back. They threw all these like low danger shots at this kid who looks like Gallagher, by the way. It's really weird. He's got you said you saw him too in the hotel.
Yeah, I did, but I had no idea who he was. Of course. I just thought he was. I was like, okay, who is this guy? And
some long haired mustache guy.
Yeah, because I recognized a lot of like Kuznetsov, sure, we saw, and TJ Oshie,
right?
A lot of other random Capitals, but and Charlie, and even like Charlie Lindgren, who I know just because he's Ryan Lindgren's brother and has a mustache, but and Sonny Milano, who looks an ABA basketball player from the 70s. He was like wearing
he's got the huge hair, yeah, right,
huge hair, bell bottom sweatpants kind of things, but like were sort of tucked into his socks, which, and had these weird sandals on. It was he had a look to him, but yeah, we also saw this exact game play out,
yeah,
against the Capitals
times. Yeah,
even a week ago. It's just the Islanders were the team that won,
right?
like the Capitals had a ton of shot attempts, very little low danger stuff, and so it was, you could say it was payback for that. But the problem is that this effort, which was, from what I could tell from looking at numbers and just talking to people, generally okay, it's only unforgivable because it came on the heels of this spat of games in which they've just shot themselves in the foot. Like, the whole ethos of this team is to be well drilled, and everyone has their marching orders, and they don't make mistakes, they don't beat themselves, and all that stuff. And the Islanders have one win in since October 30th, I believe. Yeah, since Halloween.
Yeah.
And in each of those games, they had a genuine chance to win. I mean, the Bruins game, you could say they at least had a chance to get a point after the Holmstrom goal. So the fact that you come away with nothing out of the last three and 1 point out of the last four games, in which you had a 3-goal lead, then you had a leads against the Wild, you had you were tied with the Bruins in the third period and outshot the Capitals, or out attempted them by 52, and you come out with nothing. It's just,
save it.
Like, I love Casey Zizekas, and I still understand that's a tough spot to be put in as a player when you get asked that question, because you need to make a statement. And Casey is very floral with his language, as we know. But don't tell the fans to stay home. Like, the Islander fans do their part.
Right.
Like, that's the one thing you can never question about this fan base. This is a fan base that shows up. It's not like corporate empty seats for half a game because people are in suites and whatever, getting a tour or doing random bullshit. This is a fan base that comes and watches hockey games when they should go to the game. And all that does is threaten this team with a circus. And the Islanders have done such a good job of avoiding the circus.
Mm.
There's been so many circuses around the league, even just this year.
Mm. Yeah.
And each time another one pops up a tent, I'm like, thank God the Islanders aren't like that anymore.
Yeah. You definitely know? Like, take a drink every time Elliot Friedman says that Steve Staios wants to, you know, quiet the noise in Ottawa.
Yeah.
He said this probably 1,000 times in the last 3 weeks. And if you took a drink every time, you'd be dead. So, but here's the thing, like the Canucks were a circus and now they're winning. So they're right. not a circus anymore. The Leafs are always going to be a circus. But again, they started picking up wins. And now the Oilers today, who we're going to talk a lot about in the second half, fired their coach. So there's going to be a little bit of circus, but now everybody's going to get that sort of bump where it's like, oh, wow, look at this new toy we have here.
Right.
Until the next thing. So yeah, it's going to be a thing.
And as I said, exactly, it's a thing, and it's at the worst possible time because, yes. like you said, these teams that were circuses
yeah.
are now getting their shit together while the Islanders are going the opposite way. The Penguins yep. have won 4 in a row.
Yeah, of course, which we yeah, also saw coming.
yeah, exactly. The Panthers are pretty hot right now. Mm. I don't even need to talk about the Rangers. Like, the Capitals have somehow raced out to 7-4-2 start after everyone...
Yep.
said they might be the worst team in the NHL because they lost their first two games.
Mm.
The Red Wings are still doing all right. Like, this is...
Yeah,
the Islanders have just fallen like a stone in water because they're a circus right now. And it's all stuff that is by their own doing from top to bottom. Like, why... can we talk about the Engvall thing now, I guess?
I was going to say, so like... You know, in all of these games, again, the Islanders had chances to take the lead or at least, you know, go to overtime. And in the game against Minnesota, Engvall had set up Oliver Wahlstrom for a beautiful goal that reminded you, oh, yeah, this guy Wahlstrom is pretty good. But, of course, then they gave up the tying goal and then fell apart in the third period. In that third period, Engvall was trying some kind of weird dipsy-doodle move in his own zone. He got picked off by Pat Maroon. Pat Maroon, of all people, picked off a puck. I mean, that's a bad sign. Ends up saying that to Joel Eriksson Ek, basically for, you know, what ended up being the final nail in the coffin. That made it a 4-2 game at that point, and that's how it ended. So the next game in Boston, you know, the writers are looking at practice, and there's no Pierre Engvall. He's out with the scratches, and it looked like, and in fact, Engvall was scratched for that game against Boston, which, again, they lost. But again, they played pretty well. They just lost. And, you know, my take on it was they weren't going to win that game with Engvall anyway. And from a disciplinary perspective, I kind of get it because the team has been falling apart in the third periods. You can't bench Anders Lee. You can't bench Matt Martin. We'll talk about that in a second, too. And so Engvall makes kind of an easy target to be like, okay, guys, we have to stop this. And Pierre is going to sit. Because of this, as sort of a message sent to the rest of the team. Like, if you bench, people were like, oh, why don't they bench Lee? If you bench Lee, what is the message? That you can't be slow? Like, I don't understand what is the message there? I'm just going to punish the captain for somebody else's mistake. So it had to happen. People were like, oh, you're taking one of the best players off the best line. Yeah, okay. He also hasn't scored yet this season. We love Pierre, but he hasn't scored a goal yet this season. And so it, again, created this circus, which was the last thing the Islanders needed. And of course, you know, they didn't need any help losing in Boston because they do that all the time. But it just, and now it's funny because now with the loss to Washington, people seem to have completely forgotten about this scratch, but it was a wild, you know, 48 hours or so where people were kind of making Engvall out to be, you know, 1977 Guy Lafleur and making Lane seem like he's kind of lost the plot, but I kind of get it. Like, I kind of understand it because I want something done to fix these problems, and at least somebody's trying something, right? And it just didn't work, obviously, but and it probably was never going to work, but at least it was something. At least it showed that, like, everybody's, you know, Lane is alive and he can make a decision here, but it didn't really work out. So, yeah, I mean, what was your take on it? Like, it was a weird thing.
Yeah, I think in the right context, it would have been the right thing to do, but
sure.
The problem was then that game against the Bruins, Anders Lee has a brutal turnover to the defensive zone. Yep.
Falls down.
Sam Bolduc looked like he was trying to score on the now 2-on-1 down low. Like, I couldn't believe what he was doing. If you remember the goal, he was facing the Islanders' goal, And I don't know, Charlie Coyle apparently had the best game of all time in that win, because it was the way it was celebrated. But he had a hat trick. But whoever had the puck on the pass looked like he had two options. One was to pass it to Sam Bolduc, who would try to tip it in past Sorokin, or he could go to the far post to whoever ended up scoring the goal. But that's how Sam Bolduc played that puck. So not only did you have Lee turn the puck over again and just continue his really tough start to the season, then you have Bolduc do that, and you can say, oh, well, the Islanders, you know, they don't have the bodies on defense to replace Bolduc. Wave him, like, at this point. What team is in the NHL has had their number seven defenseman probably cost them 6 points in like his 30 games he's played them? 10? I don't know. You can maybe even go beyond that. So that's one. Two is like Anders Lee just gets off scot free, and that, so yeah, like I was fine with him scratching Engvall to make a point. And then, but then also the thing that pissed me off after that was, hey, why did you scratch Pierre Engvall? Oh, that's between me and Pierre.
Yeah.
Like the cone of silence is fine. We I think we both appreciate it, but you can when it's something like that, like we saw what happened. You can just say he had an egregious turnover.
Right. We've been terrible in third periods, and that play was endemic and representative of all of the bad plays that we've made in third periods over the last week. So I had to send a message. And that's it. And that's, you know, that's what I told Pierre.
That's when it just that's when it becomes like a mockery of itself. Cause I think both of us agree that the cone of silence is a useful thing, especially in this sport where if you let anything out of the room, somebody at the Athletic is going to start writing fan fiction. Like all, the next thing you know, like James Myrtle shows up at your doorstep and is like breaking into your house and stealing family heirlooms.
I mean, this, like our worst thing was, you know, in the preseason. Well, where's Kyle Palmieri? Well, he's day to day. Well, he's out for 3 weeks. Well, what do you come on, dude? It's the preseason. It's just tell us what's wrong.
It's training camp. The guys are here. They're at Adventureland today. It's okay to tell us what's going on when they're at Adventureland.
Let's talk about Lee real quick, because the Engvall benching kind of brought up the Lee conversation. He hasn't been great this season. He's got 2 points in whatever it is, 13 games. Again, we've said this before. We love Anders Lee, the person. He's just the kind of guy you want representing your team. But on the ice, things are bad. They've moved him on. He's been on literally every line. He goes from the third line. He's been on every line but the fourth line, because the fourth line is locked in stone, obviously. But he's been, you know, one day he'll be on the first line, then he'll get busted down. Holmstrom was on the first line against the Caps, and he looked great. And then they put Lee there, and, you know, everything kind of fell apart. He just doesn't seem to have a spot right now. And as I was telling our friend Rat Martin on Twitter, like, if he was just a power play specialist at this point, where he just, you know, come off the ice, park his massive frame in front of the net and create havoc and allow the Islanders to score power play goals, you know, you could live with it, because they would be productive. And, you know, okay, fine, maybe he can't get up and down the ice, and maybe he doesn't really fit on a line, but at least he's got this one thing that he's really, really good at. The problem is he's not really good at that anymore either. And obviously the Islanders power play isn't really as good as it should be or could be. And it's tough to watch. And he's got like, what, 3 more years at that $7 million? Man, I don't have an answer for this. And this is, again, you know, I sympathize with Lane, because I just don't know what to do. You can't scratch this guy. And then it becomes another circus. Oh, my God, the Islanders have scratched their $7 million captain. Well, why'd they sign him for that? Well, because the other captain left the year before. So that's why they had to sign him. Like, come on, give me a break. We all forgot about that. So it becomes, you know, this sort of Ouroboros eating its own head. Only in this case, it's Anders Lee kind of eating his own head. And it's just a weird situation to be in. I don't envy Lane at all, because I don't have an answer for you. I mean, you can't put him on the line with Barzal and Horvat, work well together. But then with Lee, there's like an odd man out. And, you know, Holmstrom and Pageau and Fashing work together, but then you put Lee there and the whole thing falls apart. So I don't know what to do with him.
I think that there actually isn't a solution here. You don't have to keep playing the fourth line together.
That is, yeah.
And you don't need to dress Hudson Fashing every night.
Yeah.
Like you can if you bump out Matt Martin for a night and put Anders Lee in either that role, or you, and then you, like, if you let's just say you took out Matt Martin and Hudson Fashing for a night, and you inserted Julian Gauthier or Oliver Wahlstrom, who I guess at this point in their career, what's the difference, right? Like, does it make it? I don't think it makes a difference.
No.
So you just assume it's you know, those two guys coming out, Wahlstrom and Gauthier coming in, then you can move Lee down to the third or fourth line, either play with Peugeot and Holmstrom or Peugeot and Wahlstrom or Gauthier, and put the other one on the fourth line for now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what I'm like. They're shooting themselves on the foot on and off the ice by not doing, like not doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The fourth line doesn't need to be out there.
Yeah.
It's just, this has been a thing too for 2 years where we're like, oh, well, you know, at least Lane has told us he's not committed to just running this line into the ground.
Right.
No, he is. And I don't think that anybody outside of the Islanders would think that it's a big deal that Matt Martin is in the press box for a bunch of games in a regular season. They'd be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. He's there, clearly their 13th forward. Because right now, if you go through this lineup, and you search and you separate the forwards by guys who you trust could score if they had the puck on their stick and with a decent scoring chance, and guys who you don't trust, you have six dead bats in the lineup right now.
Yeah.
The entire fourth line, Lee, Fashing, Pageau, that's six names out of 12.
And to be blunt, as much as Horvat and Barzal look well together, you know, weaving in and out of each other's, you know, lanes and drop passes and stuff like that, that's all beautiful hockey. You guys got to score a goal.
Score.
Like, you got to score the goal. You have to. Enough with this. Somebody's got to put the puck in the net. And it can't always be Brock Nelson. Like, you know, he's the only guy. Again, don't forget, you know, we all love Pierre Engvall. The guy has no goals this season. So as good as he's been playing, you know, we're into sort of like we're veering into Anthony Beauvillier, Josh Bailey territory. We're like, yeah, he's playing okay, but he's got to score a goal. Like, you know, we're 12 games into the season now or whatever.
He should just shoot the puck. Like, he doesn't shoot the puck, which is his problem more than anything. I think he had four shots against the Capitals, but before that, that line had 66 total shots. And 58 of them came from Palmieri and Nelson. So and I get that playing those two guys haven't met a shot they don't like, but but once again, like, Engvall's been great, I think, as overall as an Islander, and he's been good this season.
So have Horvat and Barzal. They just don't score.
They just don't score. And what is that also tells you, as good as that second line's been, we can move things around here to find the right mix. I think it's time. It's well past time to do that. And it's well past time to say, oh man, you know, playing Sam Bolduc, his average time on ice in 10 games. Scott Mayfield's played 6 games this season. So Sam Bolduc at this point has played 4 more games than him. He's played the same amount of games as Adam Pellick, and he's playing under 10 minutes a game. He's playing 9:38. These are bad decisions, I think, at this point. For a game or two, it's fine. But it's not a game or two.
Right.
That's 8% of the season or whatever. 10% of the season, whatever that comes out to. And the Islanders have, you were talking about Engvall not scoring. Of players who have played at least 10 games, of forwards who have played at least 10 games, they have Martin, Lee, Engvall, Peugeot, all with one or fewer goals. Fashing's not far behind them. He's only played 8 games, though, but he's on 0. They have 3 more who are at 2 or less, including Barzal. Like, you're going to have to fix something here.
Yeah. You're not getting much offensively out of the defense outside of Noah Dobson, who's been fantastic, obviously, this season, and leads the team in points right now with 12 in 13 games, which is outstanding. Like, that's fantastic.
He's
amazing.
He's been so good, and we're wasting that. And we're also wasting, like, Simon Holmstrom becoming a really solid player. It's so that, like, the things that aren't working, I'll say it again, are fixable.
Right.
But you just have to do it.
Yeah.
You just have to do it. You have to. I don't know. And that's what's killing, I think, everybody who's watching the teams. Because if you know, the guy who you're standing next to online for coffee tomorrow morning can diagnose the Islanders' problems. Mm. That should probably tell you that the coach should probably be able to diagnose the problems.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. He might be overthinking. He might just be overthinking.
I think he does. Yeah. Like, yeah. We it's weird. You can point to this, and it's not. I wouldn't say this is the reason that this slide has happened, but when they had that 2-0 lead against the Red Wings, that he just blew up the top six for some reason.
Yeah.
Since then, they blew that lead to the Red Wings. They beat the Capitals in a game they didn't deserve.
Mm.
And so, yeah, like they played 3 good periods since then. Like that.
Yeah.
But that, I think that is, he, in a weird way, he's very slow on the trigger finger, but he's not even on the right trigger. Like he's on a completely.
No, he just seems to make a change, and then if it doesn't work immediately, he changes it back or changes it again, and it's just, it ain't
weird changes. One other thing I just wanted to point out: the Islanders haven't won a game as an underdog yet this season either. They've every game they've won, they were betting favorites, and under Trotz and last year when they were playing well, they were one of the better underdog teams in the league. So,
wow,
they need to win a game they're not supposed to win.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't play all that well against the Caps, and they walked away with a game like that. But yeah, it's no, I was going to say like one thing before we go into the second half here is like, judging by Lane's reactions on the bench, it seems like maybe they're not executing what he's told them to do, because he seems very exasperated before and after the games. He's like, you know, he's very monotone. He doesn't really show a lot of emotion. And then during the games, he's like fuming, like it's like face is red, he's got like the steam coming out of his ears, like, you know, Wile E. Coyote or Elmer Fudd, and it's just like, man, he's getting as angry as we are, but like we can't change it, he can change it, and I just don't know if it's happening. And the other thing that ticks me off is that, you know, we've talked about the change to Barry, and you know, I hate to compare, but like we've talked a lot, Barry was burnt out, Barry needed a break, Lou recognized that, basically gave him a year off with full pay to get everything together, and now he's moved on to management, so it's kind of worked out for everybody. But like with one of the other things too that we heard at that time was that the guys had started to chafe a little bit under the structure that Barry had instituted over the course of 4 years. And I get that. Like, it's tough. You know, playing defensive hockey is hard, and these guys have played a lot of it over the last couple of years, and I kind of get that. But now we've gone the other direction where there is no structure whatsoever. And I feel like Lane is probably teaching them some sort of structure, and it is not being adhered to, and he is having trouble kind of bringing them back to that, because when this team plays structured as they had against, you know, the Coyotes in that probably their best game of the season so far, like it works for them, you know, or given that game against the Senators where they played pretty well, you know, it works. But you know, if they're not listening to him and they're not following his instructions and they're not playing his, you know, game plan or whatever, I don't know. Something needs to change. Like those guys, they either need to get it or whatever. Maybe he needs to go. So I don't know. There's a lot of questions. We don't have a lot of answers. I can't imagine seeing Anders Lee on the fourth line anytime soon, although you made a very compelling argument for that.
Yeah. No, I don't think it'll happen at all. But I think that there's just a way to throw him into the bottom six and just reconfigure it. And it just starts with saying to the fourth line that there will probably be another time for you here. Yeah. I mean, it's not definitely. Just because you scratch someone for a game doesn't mean it's
the end of the world.
Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah. Good point. Okay. We're going to take a quick break, come back on the other side, and we're going to talk about this upcoming road trip to Western Canada and the Pacific Northwest. And then we are going to have another edition of Master Leaf Theater. So come back with us on the other side. Thanks. So the Islanders go on their first extended road trip of the season this week. They are in Edmonton on Monday. That is an 8:30 start, so probably the night you're listening to this. Then they are in Vancouver on Wednesday, in Seattle a night later on Thursday, and then Saturday night they are in Calgary. It's a 7 o'clock start on Saturday, but the two middle ones there in Vancouver and Seattle are both at 10. I'm just going to be blunt. We're going to talk a lot about the Oilers and their changes in a second, but I'm looking at these four teams, three of whom have kind of struggled so far this season, one of whom can do no wrong. They're up 3-0 on the Canadiens right now as we speak, the Canucks are. And I see four straight losses. I can't see the way this team, the Islanders, are playing right now. I cannot see a scenario in which they take any one of these games. I don't care how much these teams are struggling. The Oilers are second to last in the Pacific Division. The Flames and Kraken aren't far behind them or far in front of them. These should be winnable games, but the way the Islanders are playing now, I can't see them winning any of them. And so they've already lost four in a row. And I have a feeling that the next episode we do, we will be talking about an 8-game losing streak. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm looking at these and I'm like, there's no way. How do they win these games? How do they win a game in Calgary? I don't know. Like, I don't know when last time I saw it happen. How are they going to beat this Canucks team that, you know, right now is on the PDO bender of all time? Even their fans have recognized, yeah, this is just kind of happening now, as much fun as it is. And the Oilers just fired their coach, so it's going to be the first game against a new coach. You know the Islanders aren't going to win that game, period. They never win those kinds of games. So this just looks bad. And I'm very, 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 very nervous that we're going to come back and we're going to talk about an 8-game losing streak and the season really seriously, truly being very much off the rails and perhaps permanently. So I don't know. You look at these four. What do you think when you see them?
Yeah, we saw this. We knew this was coming. Like we had a feeling that we'd be at this episode 2 weeks ago. We said that feeling that this episode, we're going to be talking about this road trip and the potential of it just completely capitulating the season. And it has that potential now. And like you, it's really hard to see any of these games going the right way at all. The Islanders are going to be underdogs in each game. The schedule does them no favors. They have one day off
In
between the game in Washington and going to Edmonton. Of course, you know what else is funny is a couple weeks ago, you and I were talking about how we had this Oilers game circled for McDavid coming back from his injury.
Yes.
And you kind of just felt like this game was going to be weird. Like the Oilers season was going to, it's been crazy so far. This, like, they've been a circus the entire way so far. And for some reason, we had this feeling that this Islanders game was going to be a crossroads for maybe both teams. And lo and behold, here comes some random AHL coach to coach the Oilers and make his debut against the Islanders, which we just knew was going to come, something strange was going to happen at this game, and here it is. So it's 4-6 nights. There's a back-to-back in the middle of it, and they get the Kraken on the second night of the back-to-back. So the team, like you said, they're taking on the Red Hot Canucks. It's going to be a circus because it's Horvat's return. I like that Andrew Gross got ahead of that by asking Bo Horvat about his return to Vancouver before the Islanders played the Minnesota Wild.
It's never too early.
To get ahead of that one.
I'm all about being prepared. So that's funny. Oh my God.
It's hard. I was talking to somebody today at the league who's in the league, and it's like, the Islanders are in trouble. And I said, yeah, I know. Thank you for that. And he said, he kind of looked at it as an outsider looking at the four opponents, being like, they should be okay. Like, the Canucks are going well, but they should come back to earth at some point.
Eventually they will. They'll lose eight or 10 games in a row.
And he's like, the Kraken have been up and down. The Flames have been pretty poor generally for the season. And the Oilers are just out of control. And it was funny to hear him talk about that as an outsider, like very matter-of-factly. And then me, I'm like, there's no way they can beat any of these teams.
I think the same exact way. I feel the same way.
What would be a good result for this 4-game road trip?
If they take one of these games, I'll be pleasantly surprised. If they take two of them, I will be ecstatic. You know, if they take 5 points, you know, you lose in overtime, then okay, great. That's fantastic. Really, seriously. And if they win anything more than that, that's great.
Yeah. I think it's fair. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Had this road trip come a week and a half earlier, I think we could say, oh man, a win and like 3 points is fine. Fine. Whatever. You'd want at least four, but it happens.
Yeah.
But I think now, like in theory, what you said is right, but because our expectations are so low, but when you look at where they are in the standings, they probably need to win two games.
Yeah.
On this road trip to not lose any ground in the races. And I think we can now kind of separate the Eastern Conference into two mini leagues, which is the Bruins, Rangers, Hurricanes, and Devils, I'm assuming at one point. We'll catch up to them, and those four teams will kind of battle it out for the top spot in the conference at large, and the Rangers, Hurricanes, and Devils, I'm sure, will just battle for the Metro. And then honestly, like the rest of the conference, because I know the Leafs have won a couple in a row, but they've been pretty bad, and I don't think there's very quick fixes coming for them. I guess the Panthers have been really good, so maybe they belong in that top mini league. But it's gonna be like the Islanders, the Red Wings, Lightning, Sabres, Penguins, Senators. Like,
yeah,
this could be like eight teams just battling for two wild card spots.
Basically, yeah.
So you just got to look at it like that now for the time being, unless the Islanders put a streak together, hot streak or a very cold streak. And so you got to keep pace with these teams. And I think getting two wins on this trip is probably the only way they can do that. So somehow beating the Oilers with this new coach bounce, which I have no faith in them doing. Like if they win tomorrow night against the Oilers, all of a sudden you're just like, oh God, like they just need to win one more of these next three games basically to come home and at least be in a decent spot for three games to close out or to through the holiday week with two games against the Flyers and one against the Senators, which you're feeling decent about, even though one of them's a back to back. Like, because like you said, if let's just say they do put up an 0-for-4 spot, those next three games after the road trip are Flyers, Senators, Flyers, doesn't seem that daunting. But when you're in the midst of a 0-7-1 streak or whatever they're going to be in at the time, they all become daunting. And then it's Devils, Hurricanes, Panthers. Like they need to win games. Like they put themselves in a spot because they blew it against the Hurricanes, they blew it against the Red Wings, and they blew it against the Wild. Like they put themselves in a spot now where they actually need to upset some odds.
Yeah. I mean, they blew it against the Wild for sure and the Red Wings for sure. And a rookie goalie playing for the Capitals.
And the
Capitals back to back.
I know. That's true. Like, I'm giving them a pass. I'm giving them a pass because they played well against the team on the second. I have a back to back with Hunter Shepherd in goal.
Yeah. I think you're right. Like, ultimately, you get 4 points out of these four games and you stay in the mix. Like, you don't fall off the wagon, basically. If you get more, then that's even great. Because then, like you said, if they can come back and, you know, it's funny because, like, I'm thinking about this now, as bad as we've been, you know, slamming this team this whole time, I could see them winning those three games against the Flyers and Senators, or at least taking, you know, 5 out of the 6 points. Like, maybe, okay, finally lose an overtime in a back-to-back, or maybe, you know, one of those games. That would probably be okay. But, like, if you lose all four of these, those points are going to mean a lot less, and it's going to be a serious problem for you. So they need to find two of these wins. They could, you know, if I'm going to pinpoint probably Seattle and Calgary, but, like, you know,
if that's the case, by that point, they're on a 6-game losing streak.
Exactly.
Right?
They're on a 6-game losing streak. Everybody else is winning. The Rangers look like I guess they were down against the Blue Jackets a second ago. But like you said, the Penguins have caught fire. The Caps are finally back in contention, and the Devils will figure it out again eventually. The Penguins, you know, I mentioned the Penguins already, but we just hate them so much. But yeah, you've lost 6 games in a row, and now all of a sudden you've got to build yourself back up. But again, like, the Seattle game is on the second of a back-to-back with travel. And then the Calgary game is your last on the road trip. Like, you just want to get the hell home before Thanksgiving. So I just don't know. I just don't. Yeah. And I just don't see. And that's what drives me nuts about, like, oh, these are winnable games. Not the way this team is playing.
No, they're not. Yeah. They're not winnable games. They look David versus Goliath right now, except Goliath is a 3-7-1 team. You know, like that's where the Islanders are at. Right. That I'm looking at the Edmonton Oilers and their 3-9-1 record, 7 points in 13 games, their 888 save percentage or whatever it is, 864 actually, save percentage. And I'm saying that's Goliath right there. Like, right. Come on. This is,
yeah, it's insane. It's insane. Yeah. And like a lot of what we've talked about has to change. And so like if Bo Horvat returns to Vancouver and scores a hat trick in that game and they walk out with a win, just on running on pure spite from Bo Horvat, well, then God bless. Like, I'll take, you know, maybe the Oilers, you know, have a miscue and, you know, the coach doesn't really do much. And all of a sudden everybody's kind of confused and they win, well, walk out with a win. Then that's great. They're going to need some luck, but they're going to need to make their own luck too. And they're going to need to start scoring goals. So I hope that we come back and we're wrong. Like, I don't want people to think about this. Oh, these guys are always so, you know, doom and gloom. A lot of times we are, but like, I hope we're wrong. If we come back next week and like, you know, they've won four games in a row on this road trip and like, you know, they're back, you know, a point out of third place or something in the Metro, well, then we'll take it. That'd be fantastic. But it just right now with all the stuff that's going on around this team, it seems very, very, very hard to envision that happening. And now a word from our sponsors. First is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, jerseys, mugs, and more, featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Vintage Ice Hockey also carries our Al Arbor and the Island merch, and our portion of the sales always go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. Use the code ANXIETY20 to save 20% off an order of two items. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. They offer a rosé, a Pinot Grigio, and a Pinot Noir that was named a 2022 Top 100 Best Buy by Wine Enthusiast Magazine. All are delicious, priced at less than $15 a bottle, and available at local wine shops and at UBS Arena. Learn more at thepinotproject.com. Please drink responsibly. You mentioned the Oilers before and their pitiable goals against average. Their goaltending has been absolutely terrible this year. And they just fired their coach today on Sunday, Jay Woodcroft. It's funny because they won Saturday night. They had a huge win. Looked like it was going to get the heat off of him for a bit. And no, they gassed him anyway. And they replaced him with Chris Knobloch, who was coaching the Harvard Wolfpack over the Rangers, you know, farm team. Now he's going to go to Edmonton. The number of times I'm going to call him Chuck Knobloch through the roof for sure. But I don't care because he's coaching the Oilers. But before all of this happened, it's been an eventful week for the Oilers because earlier they put their goalie, who was supposed to be their starting goalie, Jack Campbell, on waivers. He had signed a 5-year, $5 million per year contract last year. It was absolutely terrible. Rookie Stuart Skinner came in, played really well, was a finalist for the Calder Trophy. The Oilers made the playoffs, but Campbell he just had a terrible first year in Edmonton. People thought it was going to be different this year. It was not, and he's been terrible again. So they put him on waivers, which is where we find our most recent episode of Master Leaf Theater. So, Mike, where were you when you heard that Jack Campbell had been placed on waivers by the Edmonton Oilers? This was news all across Canada. Surely, yeah, this crossed your path.
Yeah, I was doing the dishes and and I saw the tweet come out and it was you could almost hear. I know you set Master Leaf Theater to music brilliantly, but when that happened, you can almost hear the music to the tweets from the different insiders coming out and saying Oilers placed Jack Campbell on waivers. Like, you could hear there was some sort of music playing in the background. The whole saga with Campbell and Skinner just not getting saves and the way they talk about it on 32 Thoughts especially, it's just, you think that like Jack Campbell is like one of their, like a loved one or something. Like, we can't, you know, we're just pulling for him. We've always rooted for this guy, Elliot. It's really hard to see this $5 million a year person now.
Well, he's worked his way up.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's made it his own thing after, you know, his weird college career.
And now he's in the city, this hockey crazy, another hockey crazy market. You got to give him credit. At least, you know, he goes from Toronto to Edmonton. He's not afraid of these big markets. And it's just not worked out for him. And we feel terribly for him, even though he's now getting paid $5 million to let in goals for the Bakersfield Condors.
Yeah, it was it was definitely a weird day, and you know, people were, you know, on one hand very cruel, but also they didn't want to say too much, you know, like, you know, well, this it was like the man who signed the contract, Edmonton GM Ken Holland, somehow managed to escape a lot of the criticism, and so did Jack Campbell. But yet somebody made a mistake somewhere, right? Like, you know, what happened to this guy that he all of a sudden fell apart? Because he played well for the Leafs, and all of a sudden he just didn't play well here. And, you know, now they're going to have $5 million a year American Hockey League goalie, which is not how everybody envisions things. But when you want the real pulse of the Edmonton market, you want to know what's really going on with the Oilers, there is only one man who you can go to, and it is venerable Oilers follower Mark Spector. Now, Mark Spector works for the Sportsnet right now. He used to work for the Edmonton Journal, I think. I don't even know who cares. But nobody can take an Oilers event and twist it into some sort of Faustian thing that, you know, encompasses all of the big ones. You know, it's like biblical, basically, is what Spector does. And he's never afraid to make things sound as if you are a dumbass and he was the guy who knew everything, you know, before you. And so this is our Master Leaf Theater of the episode. Again, remember when we first started talking about this, didn't necessarily mean we were only talking about the Leafs. And so this is our first ever non-Leafs Master Leaf Theater, but it's definitely a good one. So this comes from an article from last week, from November 7th, called Oilers GM Holland Left to Pick Up Pieces After Campbell Bet Ends with Waivers. So already the title is this very sort of weird, in this weird syntax where I guess, I don't know if he's just tired or whatever, but he's kind of writing in this sort of weird way that you often see when you read, like, you know, Victorian era text like Dickens or Poe or, you know, Bram Stoker, these types of people. It's like, get to the point, dude, seriously. But of course that's how they wrote back then. So this is about midway through, and it's actually very funny. And just in a couple of short paragraphs, he really, really just beats this idea to death that they put this very expensive, very ineffective goalie on waivers. So he writes, "Now they wanted a true number one, and it was Holland's job to provide. To those who much is given, the old saying goes, much is expected. Holland jumped to his fatal mistake, choosing Campbell, and today that chicken roosts on the National Hockey League's waiver wire." Quote, "If you can be the starting goalie in Toronto," Connor McDavid declared that day, "you can be the starting goalie anywhere. Not so fast, McDavid." As it turns out, you couldn't find a hockey writer in Toronto who would have given Campbell a five-year, $25 million deal, nor did anyone we know in the goaltending industry think it wise. But Holland fell into the trap. It is by far his worst bit of business and a largely successful five-year run as the Oilers GM. This is just 1 minute of reading here, and it's like that chicken roosts with the National Hockey League's waiver wire, and just the those who much is given, much is expected. But the best part of this whole thing is that Spector is saying that if you just asked a hockey writer, they would have told you not to sign this contract. Dude, what GM in any sport is going to go to a writer and be like, what do you think of Jack Campbell there? Think we should sign him to a five-year, $25 million deal? Nobody's going to do that. What are you talking about? My friend, the Royal Half, the great Kings blogger, had the best take on that. He said, the only reason an NHL GM would reach out to a hockey writer is if they are looking for a link to the ultimate Bruce Springsteen playlist. That's it. That's the only reason these guys should ever talk to writers. It's so funny that it's like, well, if you asked me, I would have told you not to sign a thing. Dude, nobody's asking you. Nobody's asking you. Come on, give me a break. Anyway, I just thought this was very funny.
Like, no, it's great. I I'm trying desperately to do it while we're recording here, but I'm trying to go back to the day that they signed Jack Campbell, because I'm sure that Mark Spector celebrated it.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I'm sure. Was like, I'm sure he did.
You know, Ken Holland finally gets the Oilers, the goalie that they've been waiting for.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, and I'm happy you did this episode with the Oilers, since they're playing them, and
yeah,
the Islanders are going into Edmonton tomorrow for Chuck Knobloch's debut as a coach of a National Hockey League team. Because there was also, so it's going to be crazy. And I think the Islanders just generally are viewed as just the other team that happens that's there, right, for the protagonist to play, so to speak. And so they're just going to be the background for tomorrow, which is going to be crazy, with this new coach that they fired. Was it Larry Brooks who called him Jay Woodcock?
Jay Woodcock. It was Jay Woodcroft, but to Larry Brooks, he was Jay Woodcock. I don't know if he used that in the post, but that was kind of very funny. It's all right. Hey, listen, man, it's a late night. What are you going to do for old Brooks?
So I'm just thrilled that the Islanders are going to be there, because I can't wait to hear the adjectives that are handed to the Islanders for this game, in which they will inevitably lose to the Oilers in Chuck Knobloch's debut, and Calvin Pickard will probably be in goal for the Oilers. Oh, yeah. And it's just sets up so. It's just going to be such an annoying day, and then there's the Horvat game right after that. Yeah, so it's just like this is just going to be, it's going to be hell for these next few days.
I'm definitely not looking forward to it.
I love that this is all going on, and that we got our Andrew Gross will be flying into Edmonton, and I just like to imagine him as all these Canadian. Writers are running around, and DEFCON 5 with the new coach in town, and then there's Andrew Gross, right. And I need to know if he knows if the Oilers have made this trade, have made this change yet.
Yeah,
you know, he's gonna be like, where's the other guy? And one more thing to add here, sorry, yeah. Is that another. Another Oilers writer, this one from The Athletic, Jonathan Wilson, went through this entire kind of, here's how I'm coping with this move.
Yeah.
Twitter thread, where he talks about how accomplished Chuck Knobloch is with, in like juniors, but then he was really bad in the AHL.
Mm.
And he's like having an argument with himself about, whether this is going to be a good idea or not, but it goes from him talking about how he won titles in the WHL and OHL, and even without McDavid, his team has produced a ton of talent. And it would be easier to feel good if Knobloch was coming off of great major AHL success. There are guys like that out there. Woodcroft was one of those for that matter. So it's just this incredible argument of all this stuff going on.
Yeah. Well, that's Jonathan Willis, and I've known him for a little while. He's a really nice guy, but yeah, he also can get way, way, way deep into his head to try and,
yeah, it's a crazy thread.
Things. Yeah.
So like there's this all going on, this Shakespearean tragedy going on in Edmonton. Right. I mean, here come the Islanders flying in with Casey Cizikas. Telling the fans to stay home, and nobody could score. The coach is seemingly out of his depth.
Yeah.
Sam Bolduc is still playing.
Oh my gosh.
So like they're flying in. It's this absolute heaping pile of just dross right now. they're going to come into this just insane atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's just a horrible break. Like the Rangers went through Alberta and the Pacific Northwest. Just an unbelievable time.
Mm.
All these teams couldn't buy a win. The Canucks, they caught on a back-to-back. And now here come... And they got days off in between each game. Now the Rangers are off for 6 nights after tonight.
Jeez.
And here come the Islanders, 4-6. Mm. And only 1 day of travel from Long Island and Edmonton. It's just...
You mentioning Andrew Gross makes me think that there's one man who is actually going to go up to Gross and be like, so, like, what's the deal with the Islanders? And it's Gene Principe, who does the TV stuff for Sportsnet. He's done it forever. He's way, way too tan for a man who lives in Edmonton all year long. And I could see him go and be like, so what's the deal with this team? And Gross being like, well, they're, you know, they can't hold a lead. They can't take a lead. They can't, you know, win a third period. And like, oh, what? Because what? Yeah, they used to be good defensively. Yeah, they used to be. You know, so I can imagine that conversation happening. Yeah. But like, nobody else is going to care. Like the Mark Spectors and Terry Joneses of the world, they're not going to give a shit about the Islanders. Like, you know, none of the broadcast crew, you know, doing a play-by-play, they're not going to care. So, I mean, I'm sure they're not going to talk about how good Brock Nelson has been or how good Noah Dobson's been. I don't think they're going to be like, wait, Noah Dobson has 12 points in 13 games this year? Really? Seriously? Or they're not going to care. And if anything, they'll talk about Horvat. So, but yeah. So, yeah. So brace yourselves. You know, if you're going to skip a couple of games, skip the Edmonton and Vancouver games, dude, I would not blame you at all. The Seattle and Calgary games, you know, the Calgary game actually could be interesting because, man, the Flames have been all kinds of messed up this year. So we shall have to see. Okay, real quick, couple of things before we sign off tonight. Huge congratulations to the great Pierre Turgeon, who's going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame on Monday. I'm not here to debate whether or not this is, you know, deserved. I don't care. He was a great Islander. We love him. He was a handsome dude. He played for the Islanders during a fun time, and that's all I care about. So good on him. We're getting stories about his like little league prowess and not about, you know, the time he played for the Islanders. So that's also part of it. But, some guy named Henrik Lundqvist also making Hall of Fame, who cares? He's not Pierre Turgeon. So there you go. So that's kind of cool thing. So nice to see that. I completely forgot about that, but it was cool to see Pierre, get in there, this week. Oh, so last week we did another Weird Islanders, came out on Friday with our good friend, Arthur Staple. It's another multi-man episode featuring an in-depth look at the legendary Michael Grabner for five trade that went down just before training camp and yielded a bunch of guys who, you know, were Islanders for 5 minutes, and Christopher Gibson, who hung around for a while and did some great things, but not enough to hang around. And yes, we did talk about Carter Verhaeghe. So that was a fun one. So check that out if you haven't already. The next episode of Weird Islanders is actually going to run on Wednesday, the 22nd, because of the holiday. I want to get that out, so we're going to put that out on a Wednesday. Also got a bit of a football theme to it, so take a look for that. But definitely check out the episode with Art. It's always fun talking to him. It's great having him back on the beat, and so we had to get him, so it was a fun one too. We're also doing a mailbag this week. We are actually going to record it on Tuesday, so on Monday at the Patreon page, patreon.com/islandersanxiety, I'm going to put up the call for questions. If you are a Country Club tier subscriber, you can ask and listen to the episode, which is going to come out Tuesday night. So get over to patreon.com/islandersanxiety, sign up for the Country Club tier, ask us a question, and then listen to the episode on Wednesday morning/Tuesday night. And yeah, that's a little bit of a quick turnaround for us on a, usually we have a couple of days to go, but this week obviously is packed to kill. So that's our mailbag, monthly mailbag, will be coming out this week. So check it out. That's about it. Sign up at patreon.com/islandersanxiety for ad-free episodes and bonus content. Follow us on Twitter at Isles Anxiety Pod. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Our theme song is Morning Haze by Family Dinner. Listen to more of their music on Bandcamp and at Spotify. We found out a friend of a friend, a guy named Dan Clemens, is a big Islanders fan and listener to the show. So shout out Dan Clemens. But yeah, check out Morning Haze by Family Dinner, and check out all of Family Dinner's songs because they're great. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. We are part of the Fans First Sports Network. Learn more about them at fansfirstsports.com. Shop vintageicehockey.com. Hey, listen, Kentucky Thoroughblades shirts in black are out now. They are dope as hell. Go buy them. That is the coolest, one of the coolest 90s hockey logos of all time. It's on a black shirt. You can wear it out. People be like, what the hell is a Kentucky Thoroughblade? Dude, it's like a horse who's like jacked and he's got a stick and blades. It's awesome. I love it. Check it out, vintageicehockey.com. And then obviously try Wines from the Pinot Project as well. Michael Leboff, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Any final thoughts this week? Oh, read Mike's work at Action Network and listen to his work at Action Network podcast as well. Any final thoughts on the week, the incredibly unsuccessful week that was, the potentially unsuccessful week that is coming up, your sister's wedding, the Garden City Hotel, whatever else is on your mind?
Yeah, all I've got to say now is that we do seem to be at a junction here at this Islander season, and
teetering on the brink of something.
Yeah, exactly. And it does feel like that the past few weeks since the first week of the season, like the next three have kind of all been leading up to this exact crossroads. And I think if we go one direction, and everyone can kind of take a deep breath and go into the holidays, man, that would be a dream. But it also feels like a dream. And the fact that the fan base is calling for heads to be put on spikes outside of UBS Arena is worrying. I don't think unwarranted, despite what our dear friend Mr. Diane Islander said. I do think that there's definitely some credence, although I will say that I don't know if those even solve any issues, which is kind of the scariest part of this all. Yeah, I guess I'm just kind of dreading watching the Islanders again.
Yep.
It's sounds a familiar, about right. Familiar spot.
Very much so. Very much so. And it's familiar. I don't like it. And I hope that things change, and we will talk again next week, and we'll see where we're at. And if this road trip goes as poorly as we think it will, it's going to be pretty bad. It's going to make what Casey Cizikas said seem very, very tame by comparison. Yeah,
all of a sudden, we're going to start saying that about them. Just stay home.
Just stay home, man.
Please just stay home. We don't have time for this kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's going to be bad, but we'll see what happens. Maybe we'll be pleasantly surprised. You never know. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode of Islanders Anxiety. And again, check out our mailbag, check out Weird Islanders, and just listen to us wherever you can and let everybody know. All right. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.